pretty cloudy today. Just me and a brush turkey in a car park, and it's overcast. And as Kurt Cobain said, weather changes moods. And it's Monday morning. But I will strive through. I will look at the positive side of everything. Before I know it, I'll be all happy again. That's the plan anyway. Might have a few more names I have to make up for this one too. Such a good story. It's like, but I can't, like, yeah, can't name drop. Just another person, someone I knew. Okay, we're rolling. Gordon and me headed through town, looking for somewhere to stay. Freedom was a good feeling. Some Tongan kids passed by. Really tall Tongan kid, like twice the size of me, flashed a coy smile. Guys shouted and laughed. I was back in an alien world that somehow, in between escaping Al and wandering out of the wharf, sneaked up on me. I wasn't the grey man anymore, all these people staring and shouting at us. It was trippy, especially with the boat rock. Okay. I can't mention this bar, but someone mentioned this bar. It's called the bar, but I'm going to call it the Blue Oyster Bar. If anyone's ever watched Police Academy, you will know that one. But it wasn't like the Blue Oyster Bar. There weren't local guys in leather jackets and tight leather pants wearing policemen's helmets and mirror sunglasses with mustaches. But it's a good way to remember. I won't forget it. So hopefully I can keep this up. The Blue Oyster Bar was popular with the locals. Not because of that either. Because they could hide away from their relatives and have some beers with their money. Okay, I'm calling the main character in this Naomi. If I remember this, it'd be a miracle. So, Pasella and Manu worked for Naomi and came here because it was the only place they could spend the next week's wages. As in, they had a tab at the bar. And that was the thing about Tonga at that time. Like, the king gave everybody a parcel of land, and the land's really fertile with the volcanic activity. So you can grow things really easily, like sweet potatoes, yams, taro, you've got coconuts. They've got pigs roaming around on these islands that they eat. There's all the fish, octopus, sea cucumber, seaweed. There's so much to eat. I'll probably mention more later. But you don't really need money. But the wages were like 50 bucks a week or something ridiculous. It was really low. And with that money, it was pretty much just splurge kind of stuff. Cigarettes, booze. And the sugars and the corned beef. They used to buy corned beef. It became a local dish. I think they mixed it with coconut milk and wrapped it in taro leaves. But all the shit basically was what the money was for at that point. Obviously that's changed now, but with computers and all the other gizmos we all need so desperately. Polynesians traditionally don't hoard money. Families and relatives share their riches and their burdens. Personal wealth used to be unheard of, but times are changing. The village was now a town and too big to spread money around. Some worked harder than others and felt they deserved to treat themselves to a few royal beers with their closest friends. Yeah, the local beer had a picture of the king on it. And he was a cool dude at that time. He used to ride around town on his mountain bike. Big guy though. But yeah, you could drink a beer looking at the king. So they wanted to just have a few beers, royal beers, with their closest friends. But if a relative, no matter how far removed, spotted you in a bar, it could be an expensive night. The traditions are still there. And even if your relative is a lazy bludger, if they ask you, you must buy them a drink or two, or however many until you have no more money left. Even if you're drunk and asleep when your relative turns up, they will simply turn out your pockets. The victims of the wandering relatives call them mosquitoes, and it was one of the reasons they liked to come to the Blue Oyster Bar, which was far enough away and well hidden from the road and passers-by. And Naomi, she let me camp on the grass around the back of this Blue Oyster Bar. And I was laying in this tent on the first night and the whole tent was swaying because I still had that butt sensation. In the morning, I'm going to make another name up. Stuff it, I'll call him Frank. In the morning, Franco was already up, shuffling around, chinking bottles and sweeping. He was a tiny guy, really short. So small that when I walked into the roundhouse, which was the main bar, they were all cyclone shelters, like concrete. They looked like concrete water tanks with a dome roof. And the idea was that they could withstand cyclones. Tonga was so flat as well, like the cyclone come through, there's no like real protection. I sat down with old Franco at the front drinking coffee. He told me parts of his life that all seemed sad, and it was beginning to bring me down. Naomi was the owner of the bar and the engineering workshop where Manu and Pacella worked. Franco told me she had saved him from his last employer who had treated him badly, and she had sorted him out of a job working here at the bar. The little roundhouse stuck out here in the bush was Franco's castle. He lived here, in the back of the bar. I was waiting for a break in Franco's story so Gordon and I could head into town for breakfast when a car pulled up. A lady got out in her early 40s, fair skin, dressed in long dark clothes with bleached blonde hair and dark glasses. Franco, have you seen my Becca? No, Naomi, maybe the neighbor's cat got him. I hope bloody not, that bloody cat. If it hurts my bird, you bloody better believe it. I'll put the cat in the umu. At this point, Manu wandered up the track from the workshop in his boiler suit, flushing out a small bird. It scampered across the tack and back into thick undergrowth. Ah, there he is. Phew! I thought I'd lost two already to that bloody cat. Hey, like Naomi, I need to buy material. What are you doing using all those welding rods so soon? Yes, all gone. My gods, are you selling that shit? Maybe like someone take. God, so hard switching there. She took out a few Tongan dollars from a purse and sent him on his way. She looked at Gordon and myself and smiled. Oh, you are the campers? Yeah. You're the first. Not too noisy? We sat down in the corner of the bar. Naomi offered us some food that she brought for Frank. So what are you guys up to over here? I'm heading off in a few days to the outer island, sit back in some sleepy little place and chill out, Gordon told her. We didn't say it that stoically, but you get the drift. Ah, that's great, Gordon. It's different up here. The people, their values. Nuku'alofa is slipping into the modern world. Yeah, so Nuku'alofa was pretty polluted. There was a big dump here. That's the big thing, like, about rubbish. Throwaway society. Up here, like, there's nowhere to throw it away. Just gets burnt and buried. I'd seen the oceans polluted, broken bottles and heaps of trash washed up on the shoreline. And Naomi's saying, absolutely, the locals still throwing their shit in the sea like the old days. Plastic bags, tin cans. I ran away from this shit and it's following me. Know that feeling? One day there'll be no one left to run. The whole place, one huge McDonald's bullshit. We were stunned into silence with these strong words. Facing the problems of the world can be pretty daunting, leaving you only feelings of frustration and hopelessness. I once heard a guy comparing our self-destruction of the world to a car speeding toward a brick wall. We know we're going to hit it. We know we're heading into danger, but we won't take any action until we see the wall, and by then it'll be too late. What about you, Rich? Are you going too? No, I'm looking for work. I don't know, or a ride somewhere. Well, if you're looking for work, don't look, just work. What? Start now. I'm going to open another part of my bar. I'm calling it the engine room. You can do it up for me. Grass roof, put in all the ship parts, paint them, clean up the garden, maybe chop up the trees that came down in the cyclone. Wow, I had a job. Gordon headed out a few days later on his own journey, leaving me his tent and clothes he didn't need or feel like carrying. Naomi had another roundhouse at the end of the track. She gave me the keys and told me I could use the facilities. Are you crazy? Fucking Jesus, Priscilla! Priscilla had a habit of coming up to the roundhouse around breakfast time and sneaking up behind me, holding a machete in his hands, as if he was going to chop off my head. It wasn't really that funny either, because Priscilla had done time for killing a guy in a knife fight. He told me that he only killed the guy to defend himself. Even so, he seemed to like to tell people about it. Naomi liked to help as many people as she could. She had a big heart, but had grown hard from years of being let down, and she could lose it when people took advantage. The guys in the workshop would sneak around a little bit where they could, a few back-end deals to friends. Naomi knew this, but this was Tonga, not a Western mindset, and the wages in Tonga were very low. The wage was about $50 a week for the workshop boys, but they didn't need that much. Tongan males are given a parcel of land from the king when they are 16. Here they can grow most of their food and graze their animals. Most of the earned money went on beers and cigarettes. Naomi was paying me more than she should have as a part-time worker, but it still only came to $25 a week. It's going to take a long time to save up. 10 years later, I've got enough for a ticket to fly out. Although Naomi and her husband were originally from Sweden, their two teenage kids were pure Tongan in nature. This was the only life they'd known. One day Naomi sent me, her son Jeff, and Samotu, one of the kids she'd unofficially adopted, to the outer reef in Jeff's dinghy. It's just a little sailing boat. We were to set free a turtle she'd rescued from the fishermen. The poor little bugger had taken a spike through the head. When we set him free, he could hardly swim. He just floated there in the one spot. He got washed onto the reef and ran aground. Jeff dived out of the boat and climbed up on top of the razor-sharp finger corals to rescue him without any indication of pain. Looking at him, I found it hard not to treat him like a teenage European, but I'd have to stop myself as he raised his innocent Tongan eyebrows, an innocence maintained by the dozens of religious factions scattered around the islands. The missionaries arrived full of zeal to save the souls of these errant natives, who wore minimal clothing, sang and danced, and lived a carefree existence. In my mind, the missionaries have wiped out and compromised the true character and customs of so many people around the world with their self-righteous ways. Out in the boat that day with Jeff and Samotu, eating bananas, laughing and bailing out the water that seeped through the gaps in the timber, I was happier than I'd ever been on the million-dollar yacht with Angry Al. The turtle as well, I think she rescued another one. She kept painting crosses, white crosses on the back, because the locals were superstitious about that. So if they saw one with a white cross, they wouldn't come and get it. But I don't know if that made them easier to spot as well for other stuff like tiger sharks. So I don't know. She was doing her best. Okay, the postmaster and a piglet. On the surface, nothing really happened in Nuku'alofa. But underneath, the place was on fire. One guy who used to come round to the bar was a taxi driver. He was dodgy, no doubt, but the way he spoke and acted, it was impossible not to like the guy. He spoke in a soft, sing-along voice, like a lot of young islanders. He'd headed down to New Zealand in search of money and adventure. When he couldn't find work, he got caught up with the Polynesian gangs. He'd steal and rob, which he seemed pretty proud of. But when he came back to Tonga, he was on the edge. His eyes had been opened to a new world, away from the family controls and morals. Back in Nuku'alofa, he got a job working on the ships. One night, he and a friend kidnapped some local girls and brought them back to the ship. They tied them up, but they were so drunk they fell asleep. The police were informed and a search was underway for this guy and his friend. I can't even say his name. He knew they'd be after him, so he stowed away on a ship to Australia, where he jumped overboard, north of Cairns. He swam ashore and lived as a fugitive. I think he lasted like a month or two. Finally, the Australian police caught him and he spent a while in prison before being extradited. And now he was back on the streets, driving a cab. It was a Saturday afternoon, the bar was packed. The postmaster, a generous man, was buying all the beers and heading the conversations. I'll just call him Taxi Driver. Taxi Driver and the workshop boys, although big and strong, had to bow down to this older man. At one point, he had looked Taxi Man square in the face and told him, "You, you're just a little boy. What do you know of life?" I saw Taxi Man's fists clench up beneath the table, but he said nothing. Taxi Man must have been feeling pretty unimportant in the shadow of this comparatively rich postmaster. In an attempt to save face, Taxi Man offered to go home for a pig to put on the fire. "Hey, postmaster, can I borrow your car? I'll get the pig." "Ah, yeah, good idea, but maybe if I let you drive, you're going to pick up girls in my car. Rich, can you drive?" "Hey, you're like bullshit, I come back. I get the piglet and straight back to you, I promise." Oh, postmaster didn't believe him. So there's me driving out in this Forby, out to a taxi driver's place. His wife's out the front, cooking in a smoky little shed. Kids were everywhere. The piglet was only a few weeks old and dwarfed by the tree it was tied to. Taxi Man sneaked over to the tree and untied the rope. But his wife saw him. She came over from the fire, a face full of disbelief. The kids too. An argument began. Taxi Man came back to the car with the pig in a sack, threw it in the back. "Hey, are you sure it's okay?" I asked Taxi Man. All good, take a like a, come on, take a, let's drive, just go, go." As we drove through Taxi Man's neighbourhood, he kept reaching across to press the horn, making sure everyone saw him in this nice, flashy car. "Hey, like a, stop, stop." Taxi Man waved over a boy from his village. They spoke in his native tongue. I read their expressions and translated them into my head. "Hey, Jimmy. Yeah? You're like my dickhead Palangi here. Chauffeur, he's my chauffeur." It works for me, drives me around. They're laughing at me, and then Jimmy. You want to come to the Blue Oyster Bar? Cookard is big. He pointed into the back. The poor little fella was trying to nose its way out of the bag. It's like half size. It's like picking veggies when they're not ready. Jimmy shook his head. Come on, man, you like to get some beers from the postmaster and smokes. Jimmy got in. An hour later, the piglet had a stick up its arse and was on the fire. All pity left with the smell of its roasting flesh in coconut milk. And all these tongans just devoured it. Lasted probably 5 minutes and the whole thing was gone. Grass roofs. I was waist-deep in grass, cutting it back, tying it in bunches and laying them on the engine room roof. It was a real hot job, but I wanted to get some work done to pay back Naomi for her kindness. I asked some locals advice how to make the roofs, but no one knew. They were town dwellers. Corrugated tin had replaced traditional roofs a long time ago in town. One day I was out in the yard, in the grounds of the Blue Oyster Bar. And I was looking up at the coconut palms. And a lot of these palms were just for effect. They were way too big. When they get really big, the trunks get smoother as well, because they're rougher where the palm fronds come out, and then as the years pass, they just smooth out. And I'm looking up. So what the hell, let's have a crack. So, feet back. I'd learned how to climb palms from Anthony in the Kimberleys. So I lean back. I'm struggling up this massive palm, putting the weight in the soles of my feet, hanging off my arms, trying to climb up. I get nearly to the top, and there's a big bow in it against the way I'm leaning, so I have to sneak around the back, and I'm trying to climb up the last bit. About 30 foot off the ground, and all the people from Blue Oyster are watching me, and some are kind of laughing at my attempts because it's all effort and not much skill. I have to grab the big palm fronds at the top, just trust them, and pull myself into the canopy there, and I'm laid up in the top, covered in ants and scratches, welts, trying to twist off a coconut, when a ladder comes up the side next to me and Manu pokes his head up. He says, Rich, we have ladders now. They must see a lot, these local dudes, like people coming over and trying to be like Robinson Crusoe. Rich, we have an elevated work platform and some safety harnesses. No one does that anymore. That wasn't quite that bad in the 90s, but I'm sure it is now. You probably need a safe work method statement to climb a coconut tree. What the fuck? Out on the outer islands, the dudes, like, it's impressive. They do massive strides up the tree. They put one foot on, and they reach up over like a meter and a half with the next foot, and then they do the same again. Well, it could be up to a meter. It seems like a meter and a half. But they just kind of stride up the tree in probably 10 strides, and then they're up in the canopy, hanging off real casual, one arm, twisting off the coconuts, and then they walk back down. They don't slide down the pole because they've got loads of energy left. Just walk down, drop to the feet, not even breaking a sweat. Street fighters in the roundhouse. Little Franco was pretty miserable. He normally was. He barely moved from his seat outside the roundhouse waiting for customers. Franco had been here for decades, and yet he says he didn't really want to come. It was as if he'd been held here against his will. But then I don't think that he had much will left. For all his time here, he couldn't even speak the language. Two Scottish guys had tricked him into starting a business over here. He said he was once very wealthy, but now he had nothing. Just a pair of flip-flops and a couple of pairs of trousers. They had conned him out of all his money, left him penniless. He married a local woman and had a child with her, but she too conned him. Or so he said. Marry a Tongan. Oh my God, marry the whole bloody family, he told me. No, he wasn't like that. He was, he's a Londoner, to be fair. I just made up different names, but he's like, marry a Tongan. Oh my God, marry the whole bloody family, he said. It's a wonder we had a child. I mean, how could we make love with half a family staying at the bloody Farley? His daughter would come to see him sometimes. She was a beautiful young lady. He called her his little princess, and she was. Another traveller showed up called Jerome from Switzerland. On the quiet nights, we would sit in the Blue Oyster Bar with Frank to keep him company, playing cards and telling stories, sometimes letting Franco win if his luck was running out. Yeah, it's weird. He was living in what someone from a cold climate would consider paradise, but he was stuck in a bubble. Poor guy. And getting too old to go anywhere else. On the nights leading up to the weekend, the bar would get much busier. Cars and people would appear at the most ridiculous hours, knowing that little old Franco would get out of bed and open up. I felt a bit vulnerable in my flimsy tent, so close. I could hear the guys urinating and throwing empty bottles into the bush. One Saturday night, I woke to hear a noise of someone having immense pleasure beside my tent. Oh, hello, are you awake? The voice was from a man, but it was high pitch and camp. Well, I was camping. I said nothing, hoping he would leave me alone. Remember me? I work in the travel agents. Yeah, I think so, but listen, mate, I'm trying to sleep here. Is this your tent? It's nice. Can I see inside? I tried to sound as macho as I could. No, listen, fella, I'm tired and I want to sleep, so if you don't mind. Guess what I'm doing with my hands? The guy was taking a piss. It wasn't a trick question. Look, mate, just put your knob away and go, all right, fuck off. Oh, sorry, I'm a little bit drunk. Maybe see you later? The faculty stumbled off into the night. Now, there's a thing in Tonga where you have to check the exact details, and maybe it's changed now, but back then, if a family just had boys, they made the last boy into a lady called Fakaleti, and they had to do all the chores in the house and dressed up as a lady. Do a research on that, because there's probably a hell of a lot more than that, but this guy was a Fakaleti. And Fak is pretty big over there, like people's names, like Fakafanua. Yeah, it's kind of a common thing. So it sounds funny when Fak this, Fak that, but it's like general language over there. When I was sure he was gone, I got up for a drink of water. Pacella was sat outside the Blue Oyster Bar with another guy. He saw me and waved me over. Hey, Rich, be my brother, Brother Steve. His brother was hunched over the table, his head rolled across his shoulders as he fought to stay awake. Steve, wake up, me my friend, good friend, Rich. Hey, Rich, he held out his hand. Hey, fuck the horse. What is this thing about fuck the horse? Everyone's saying it. He finished off his beer and lobbed the bottle into the bush. When Steve spoke, his fist moved in front of him like exclamation marks. Hey, my brother, he live in LA, America. He's a street fighter. Yeah, I'll fucking kill you, motherfucker. Started punching the air between me and himself. Hey, no, he's okay, Rich. Pacella, no, he's my friend. He's my friend, okay? Sorry, my brother's friend. You're good. We made like a humo for you tomorrow. A humo, I need to cook it like a pig. Take us some good veggies, man. Sweet potato, taro. I shook his hand. Yes, tomorrow we make a humo. Good friend, good.
But if you're fucking here, you're fucking, if you think you have a fucking go, I fucking kill you easily, like you're fucking.
No, mate, I don't fight. I don't fight. I just need a pee and a drink of water. Oh, yeah, sorry, Omo. Yeah, oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. Tomorrow. See you, Rich. Fucking hell. That was it. You didn't know who you were going to meet on the way to the bathroom in this place. Jesus Christ. I got back to my tent, zipped up my sleeping bag and hid inside. Escape. Nukalofa seemed to be littered with broken-hearted, cynical and stagnating Palangis. And Palangi is, you guessed it, it's like Pākehā. It is long pig. So maybe the Tongans were having a little KFC-style European for breakfast and turning them into poo. But they did call this the Friendly Islands. So I think Captain Cook called this the Friendly Isles. But apparently, in the background, they were plotting to kill him. But it didn't quite work out. Naomi was above all this. She had a strong will and self-respect. And she was much more integrated than most. Most stayed on the edge. Neither Palangi nor Tongan. No wonder they were lost. Someone was dipping the till at the Blue Oyster Bar, and Franco blamed his Tongan bar staff. You can't trust them, mate. Look at my wife. She left me. I got nothing. And now these guys, a dollar here, a packet of fags there. But you won't catch them. Oh, no. Too clever for that. I mean, I can't be here all the time. Just to explain, Frank, as well, he had grey hair and a grey moustache and wore dark sunglasses, a bit like the 70s Chips style, but without the mirror tint. Naomi took on a Palangi woman called Pat. She was honest, but she drank and smoked so much on a shift that her wages couldn't cover a tab. Pat was one of those people who found it easy to absorb information, and she would often reiterate during conversations to imply superior intelligence rather than basically good data downloading capabilities. You ever meet people like that? They're just really good at remembering shit, so they just spew facts out at you. But as for, like, basic intelligence, they're fucked. Despite this, she liked to be one of the lads and smoke cigarettes like a plumber with her ass out. The night shifts sometimes ran so late that Pat would sleep over in the roundhouse. When I came round for breakfast, Pat was sat on outside talking to Naomi. Ah, yes, Naomi, you see, take your daughter, an intelligent girl, oh yes, but she needs better education. I could give her private tuition, and believe me, Naomi, you're looking at the best tutor on Tonga Tapu. Naomi was being polite, but finding it hard to hold back her laughter as Pat tried to sell herself in a pink furry bunny pajamas, a cigarette in one hand and a beer in the other. I'll teach her all right. I'll teach her how to get wrecked every night, smoke copious amounts of cigarettes. Naomi was great. She had a better name than that too, but I'm not saying it, so I don't put her out there. Real soul. Naomi had one more Palangi working for her as a cleaner. She was called Sally. There was no doubt why Sally loved it so much in Tonga. She could get laid here. That's pretty bad, but Tongan men would take her on because she was loose. Sally was in her late 40s and a little bit simple, with a grated, drunken laugh. She would drink after work, get smashed, and hope she could cop off with someone. Sally once caught her in the men's toilets, where she had five or six guys lined up comparing the size of their penises. poor old man who got mixed up with her, and I think he'd really fallen for her. I decided I should get away from the Blue Oyster Bar, away from little Franco and his blue flip-flops, if only for a day. I walked along the shore toward town, subconsciously checking out the coconuts that held on to the swaying palms, wondering if I could climb so high. Down on the front, an old guy had a shack stuffed full with bikes. They were pretty old, but he maintained them well, and I found one which would get me around the island. I pointed it out to the old guy. "How much for the bike for the day?"
"For the day, $10.
$10?
Oof, half a week's wages, bruh. Would you take 5?
He took a gold coin out from his pocket.
"Okay, bananas? It take like a banana, $8. Heads, $10.
He flipped the coin high and slapped it against the back of his brown hand. When he moved his other hand away, a bunch of bananas were sparkling in the sun. I rode for 8 miles that day to the west, past a village where the young kids chased me with their machetes. Bit scary. And onward to paradise. Especially because a lot of these kids are so well built. 12-year-old, bigger muscles than me, chasing me down the road. I rode onward to paradise, where a couple of Aussie surfers sat under shady palms, waiting for a wave to push over the reef. To the east I found squalor and pollution. A village had sprouted up on the edge and within a rubbish dump. When the wind blew offshore, plastic from the dump blew into the ocean. The villagers got tangled in the plastic when they worked the reef looking for octopus on low tide. The shoreline was littered with plastic bottles, flip-flops, broken glass, wire from burnt-out tyres and scrap metal. A toddler sat in his dad's lap, cooking fish on a stick. Pigs roamed around, burying themselves, and ploughed their snouts through the trash. And trash was a real problem on the islands. I mean, what do you do with all the non-degradable waste? Bury it? Burn it? Feed it to the pigs. The piles were getting bigger and bigger, and there was no more holes to stuff it into. The villagers made the best of a bad situation. They kept the place as clean as they could, burning off rubbish and cutting back the undergrowth. They had pride and they looked happy. Happier than angry pirate Al. Definitely happier than Franco. When I got back, Naomi was in the engineering office, sat in a dark, cool corner with her sunglasses on.
"Afternoon, bats." "I'm not a bloody bat. The sun makes you old."
I sat down in a little office, amongst the metalwork and ship parts.
"Did I ever tell you how I got here, Rich?"
"I came with my husband on a ship. He was an engineer. We travelled the world, and I think we find paradise, but now we're divorced. It's hard to be single here, you have to be tough. And now believe me, you better bloody believe nobody shit on me." Naomi told me a story where her ex-husband had taken the car because they were still in contact, because they got 2 kids. And she sent her daughter out to steal the car back because he was drunk and left him a bicycle. But he's so pissed he kept falling off. Maybe 8 or 10 times he came back full of cuts and bruises. "Oh my God, he walks in the house." I'm trying not to laugh, but he sees it in my face. "He blames me for our divorce. Says I'm the only living heart donor. Tells me it's no wonder I go for the ice for the bar. I mean, it would never melt next to someone so cold." She'd been for a bit at Naomi. I told Naomi I was thinking of moving on before I was completely out of money. Try and find the old world, the old Tonga, before it was gone forever. A friend of of Naomi's had been trying to get me on a cargo ship, destination anywhere, but it hadn't worked out. It's too hard to just jump on a ship these days with all the insurance. Unless I was like that crazy taxi driver and stowed away. Naomi was wondering how she could help me when the phone rang. It was a mate. She had wrote me a letter to take me to Hapai, an island group 150 miles north where she had family. I was to meet a guy in Lefuka in Hapai and hand him the letter from Naomi's friend, which would explain what I was doing and what I wanted to do, which was to get to a remote island and live traditionally. There was only one ferry per week and it was leaving today. If I wanted to catch it, I should get a move on. I wanted to travel light, so I took only a few belongings. Gordon's tent and my sleeping bag and ran down the lane toward the wharf. So, thanks for listening, and this is my my next episode will be my last. I'm going to paddle out into the ocean on my surfboard and disappear into Polynesia and never come back. Okay, and I'm gonna sign out with a little tune that's my mate Lee White from London, aka Grimace, put together based on the poem that I did about the hippies, the hay men. Here it is. Coming out in all good record stores soon. I'm a hippie, I've done nothing wrong. I ride in this van, though I don't belong. Fuse out black smoke, I've never seen. I'm a one with nature, man, I'm Mr. Green. Hey man, I'm a hippie, I eat only veggies, no takeaway. Delivered eco-friendly by a big buckle truck. I don't have to work, steal or deceive. Put my hand in a pot, share and believe. Start to grow dreads, pierce my nose, bright stars and spots, big baggy clothes. So open-minded. Hey man, I'm a hippie. Pierce my nose, bright stars and spots, big baggy clothes. So open-minded. Judgmental? No way. But if you don't look like me, piss off. Go away. Hey man, I'm a hippie. Start to grow dreads.